Since 1889, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service has been a trusted name in the Richland Center area, providing compassionate care and support for families during difficult times. For assistance, call 608-647-4808. Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, trusted by the community for over 135 years.
One would exclude those in the country illegally. The president's new tariffs kicked in at midnight, says ABC's Rachel Scott at the White House.
After months of pauses and extensions, overnight, President Trump's punishing new tariffs finally snapping into effect. More than 90 countries now facing tariffs ranging from 15% to as high as 41%, while almost all imported goods remain subject to a 10% tariff. Those tariffs will be paid by companies, but economists warn the costs may be passed on to consumers.
The Kremlin says President Trump and President Putin have agreed to a summit, but Putin has not signed off on the idea of letting Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky take part as well. There's a briefing about an hour from now on the base of Fort Stewart, Georgia, following the mass shooting yesterday that left 5 soldiers wounded and a sergeant under arrest. This is ABC News. There's no motive yet for the shooting at Fort Stewart, Georgia. 5 soldiers wounded, all expected to live. Sergeant Cornelius Radford is under arrest. ABC's Faith Abube is on the base.
This is at least the second shooting in the last 3 years here at the base. There was a third incident recently as well. We're not sure whether that was a shooting, but I mean, it's concerning. Officials are looking into the security here. But one of the questions out of this specific situation is, how did he get a handgun onto the base?
Nearly a full day medical emergency rescue mission at the U.S. base in Antarctica. 3 people were taken away.
It took nearly 20 hours to complete this medical evacuation. These operations are The last time the Royal New Zealand Air Force conducted one of these missions was back in 2021 and 2024.
ABC's Matt Gutman. The staffers were unable to get the medical care they needed into Antarctica, officials say, but they aren't saying what they were suffering from. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
They say the more things change, the more they stay the same. And that's certainly true at the Phoenix Center. A longtime favorite in Richland County, it remains the go-to destination for bowling, great food, and lasting memories. It's where friends gather, laughs are shared, and good times roll, literally. Open Monday through Saturday starting at 11 a.m. and closed on Sundays. The Phoenix Center continues to serve up favorites like their legendary pizza and friendly atmosphere. Call 649-7469 for more information or carry out.
Celebrating the life of your loved one is a commitment all of us at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service take very seriously. I'm Nick Hodge. We have helped families since 1889 celebrate, honor, and remember the life of a loved one. Our promise to you is to provide service that allows you to be able to say goodbye while finding comfort and healing along the way. And we're available to answer your questions at any time at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service in Richland Center in Muscadet.
Thanks to the Schultz Mortgage Team for sponsoring WRCO Hometown Weather Watch. Call 608-738-8765 to learn how you can buy a home with less than 20% down.
A high today in the low 80s with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Scattered showers and thunderstorms end late tonight, and a low of 68 with fog patches possible. Friday, partly cloudy, breezy, hot, and humid. The heat index could reach the upper 90s in the afternoon and a high of 91. A few clouds, warm and sticky Friday night, and a low of 72. Saturday, 90, partly cloudy, continued hot and muggy, and a 40% chance of thunderstorms by late afternoon.
Our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha! Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes. So it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
With reliable policies, personalized service, and a commitment to helping you sleep at night, we're here when you need us most. When you choose Julie Karen State Farm, you're not just getting a policy, you're gaining a partner who's there for you in life's biggest moments. With Julie Karen State Farm, you're not just insured, you're protected by a name you can believe in. With our agency, you'll have clear, straightforward guidance, personalized plans that fit your needs, and a team you can trust every step of the way. Like a good neighbor, Julie Karen State Farm is there.
The circus is coming to town. Step right up, Richland Center. Thanks to the sponsorship of Southwest Partners Incorporated, the Culpeper and Merriweather Circus is rolling into Richland Center's North Park on Sunday and Monday, August 10th and 11th. Catch one of four amazing shows, Sunday at 2 and 4:30, Monday at 5 and 7:30. This is a real one-ring, big-top circus experience, celebrating 40 years of thrills, laughs, and family fun. See Big Cats with Trey Key, Ariel Simone on the trapeze, the Perez Daredevil Duo on the tightrope, and Wheel of Destiny, the high-energy Macias family, and everyone's favorite clown, Leo Action. Save money with advanced tickets at local spots like Napa Auto and Truck Parts and Kelly's Coffee. Find all the details at cmcircus.com or follow Culpeper and Merriweather Circus on Facebook. The Morning Show on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com, featuring real community conversations that matter to our community. The WRCO Morning Show studio is proudly sponsored by Richland Hospital, caring for the health of our community. Scott Industries, enjoy building strong futures. Osborne Stump Removal, clearing the way for what's next. And Sean's Auto Repair, keeping you on the road with service you can trust. Today on the first part of the morning show, we're talking about the River Valley Area Community Gardens. They'll be celebrating a 10th anniversary already. That's coming up this Sunday. And in the studio with us, Rose Ellen Schneider, who is the president, Doug Rouse, who is the vice president, and Marlon Taft's director in the studio. I look back, Rose Ellen, on the calendar, and you were here on March 11th, giving us a little taste of spring.
Yes.
Seems like only yesterday.
Only yesterday, and now we've got the taste of summer.
Yes, you do. How do things look in spring green?
Things are looking great. We've had plenty of rain, and the crops are growing, and so are the weeds. So we're harvesting both of them, so to speak. So yeah, it's been a wonderful year so far for us.
How about the number of people participating? How has that been this year?
Well, we're about the same number for plot rentals, so that's 45 families. We have a Busy Bees Garden Club for ages 3 through 10, and we had 30 kids this year with that, so that was up. Usually we average about 23, 24, so we're up to 30, and then we had 12 junior gardeners. So at one point I figured out between the families of all of those, we're touching the lives of about 175 to 200 people, which is amazing to have that many contacts with people and gardening. So,
in your 10-year history, you've really touched the lives of a lot of folks, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. I can't even imagine the numbers. I didn't even think about that, considering that. It's just, it's so amazing to think about where we were back in May of 2016 when we first tilled that plot to where it is today. And I just posted on our Facebook page and our website last night a drone picture that Paul Kardasky had taken of the garden, and then he pans that into the village of Spring Green and takes a area view. And it's just amazing to see our plot sitting there and to see the village and then the fields around us. It's just amazing to see it.
Very nice setting.
Yeah, it is a very nice setting. Doug, how has the season gone for growing then?
Yeah, it's been a good season. We've had some pretty warm temperatures, but we've also had rain. So plants like rain, and we like rain because we don't have to water as much.
No doubt.
And admittedly, weeds like rain too, so that can be an issue. But overall, it's been a very good year. It's probably the best year we've had for some of our brassica crops, especially cabbage. We've, for the food pantry, taken out several hundred pounds of cabbage easily. And it's been a great year for cucumbers. I think in the past I've mentioned that you know, over the years of gardening, and there are things I have been able to feel quite good about growing and things that I still struggle with. I think I mentioned carrots once before. Another one is cucumbers, but this year is a great year for cucumbers, and I am so proud of the fact that we've grown some good cucumbers.
All the conditions are right, then.
All the conditions are right, yeah. Right. And in addition, you know, the things that usually do well, the summer squash and zucchinis are just going crazy. Hard to keep up. We have a pretty good-sized pepper plot. Peppers can sometimes be a bit challenging, and we're getting some very nice peppers out and in a fairly large quantity. We have a 50 by 16-foot plot of peppers, so if you think 50 feet long, that's a lot of peppers. So for the food pantry plots that we're handling as a corporate entity, the garden as a whole, we're doing very well. Potatoes, actually, kind of one of the things I like to grow, they're doing extremely well. We're running probably 250 bags of potatoes per acre on a per acre basis. We, of course, only have a few hundred foot of row, but still.
You've done well, though.
But yeah. We've done well, yeah. We've taken almost 200 pounds of potatoes out, so that's pretty good. So it's been pretty good. Onions, I'm quite happy with onions. Last year we had a real problem with onions rotting. And I think last year we had a lot of water early and then it got hot and dry. And that was hard on the onions to make that switch. This year they're doing a lot better. I've got probably the nicest onions I've had in quite a few years. And overall the garden, you know, if you look at, again, our 45 families that are gardening, you know, everybody seems to be doing pretty well. It's been a good year that way.
You and I talked before we went on. There's some natural pests as well. We've had problems with those little ugly little potato beetles. Have you seen very many of those?
Yes. So it has been a bad year, if you want to put it that way, for the insect pests. And Colorado potato beetles are definitely up this year, at least in our garden. And we struggle a little bit because conventionally, potatoes in the valley here are sprayed with insecticides, and that knocks them out pretty well. But we try not to use insecticides, and so we're somewhat limited. And the beetles have been really, really bad. Now, on the other hand, there's another potato pest, potato leafhoppers, that have been around but not quite as bad as in past years, which I don't know why.
I don't either.
it's like there's always something. If the beetles weren't bad this year, it would have been the leafhoppers. But
does that force you to harvest the potatoes a little sooner then when those
yes,
come on?
Yes, as a yeah. matter of fact, definitely, especially leafhoppers push the harvest earlier. But the beetles do too when they get to the point that they're actually chewing up all the leaves. The plants just, you know, die back a little earlier. And we have that in the garden. So we could have had even a bigger yield if we could have controlled them a little better.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you've done well despite, though.
But so. Yes, we have. Yeah. Overall, it's a very good year, for sure. So, yeah.
As long as you're talking about pests, Doug, you showed the busy bees the other day the black head of cabbage.
Yes.
You want to talk about that a little bit? Because gardeners sure. might be seeing that in their home gardens right now.
Yes, yeah. So there's a actually rather classic plant disease called black rot of cabbage. It actually affects all the brassicas, broccoli, cauliflower, kohlrabi, kale. But in cabbage, it actually can attack the head, and it will cause this rot, which turns black. And you usually have a little bit of black rot around, usually just on leaves of, like, you know, broccoli or something. But this year we had a lot of it. And so even though we've taken more cabbage out than we've ever done before, and it was a very good year, we lost, I would say maybe 10% of our cabbage was rotted with this black rot. Mm. And it's a bacterial disease. It doesn't harm humans directly in any way, but it's seed transmitted, So we think we may have just had some seed that had some of it in there, and then it spreads with rain and so forth. So, yeah, that was a bit of a surprise this year. I'm happy that it was only 10%.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, no.
Can you make sauerkraut out of that then, or not?
probably wouldn't want to make sauerkraut out of the stuff that was black. But we actually salvaged. There was some where the black rot was superficial, and we could actually remove it. So depending on how bad it is, you know, you can get around it. But in general, it's a pretty devastating disease. Historically, before people understood that it was transmitted in the seed, people would plant infested seed and they'd lose their whole crop. It was a very serious disease many years ago. Hmm. So, yeah.
One of the rewarding things about the River Valley Area Community Gardens is how you give back. And Marlon, we want to ask you a little bit about that. How sure, you know, yeah. It's got to be real rewarding to be able to help out the food pantry, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. And one thing we try to do is identify other entities where we can see there's a food need. So not only the food pantry, but the assisted living, memory care facilities. We've also identified child care providers and are making deliveries to some local child care facilities there that can utilize our stuff, as well as the free kiosk. So our real goal and real challenge is to make sure that none of the food that we produce gets wasted. You can have an overabundance, but if you don't have a place to market that or take that, it's kind of a wasted effort. So we try and make sure we can identify entities that will take the food so that we're using all our food on a weekly basis, which is something we've tried something different this year. We're actually harvesting and distributing on a weekly basis right now because we have so much food production. So it's very rewarding to see that food go, not only the amounts we've been able to produce, but what we've been able to produce, we've been able to deliver to people with a limited amount of wastage, which is really the key that we're looking for.
Tell me about your volunteers.
Well, we got probably, I would say, 10 or 12 volunteers that will come either the Sunday before the Monday food distribution at the food pantry or on a weekly basis. Now we've been getting about 8 to 10 regular people coming in. So what used to be a tougher job when it was just two or three people has become a lot easier when you get, you know, many hands make jobs easier. And in this case, we've had some good new volunteers come in, which makes the harvest much more easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With the amount of plots that we've planted and also the production we've had, it's been really important to have volunteers. And I'll just add that the volunteers, we have good volunteer help for harvest, and that's good because if you're going to harvest, you know, 40 cabbage heads and then you're going to do a bunch of peppers and then green beans, etc., it takes many hands. But we've also had really good help with weed control. And so we've got volunteers who are actually willing to come and pull weeds. That's a wonderful thing as well.
You put them to work then, right?
Right, right. One thing that we've been able to do within the gardens this year, with the board expanding some of the plots in the areas that we already have, so areas that might have not been developed within the gardens, we've been able to utilize this year. And that's one reason we've been able to expand our production, is maybe plots that have been abandoned for whatever reason, we've been able to utilize those, as well as plots within the gardens, new plots that we've developed within the garden itself. So that's helped our more in our production as well too. So mm-hmm. That'll probably be on a year-to-year basis that we'll look at doing that. But in particular this year, with some of the funding that was cut for food programs, we found it to be very necessary, and that we've been able to, that was a challenge for us to try and put more food in those areas. And I think the gardeners themselves have rose to that challenge to produce more produce.
How did you get around that, Rose Ellen, in terms of trying to get more, you know, knowing the funding was down? Did you, you know, ask them to plant more, or how did that go then?
We just make them more aware.
I see.
But one of the things that we are we utilize is those unplanted plots. So if nobody rents them, then we can go ahead and plant those once we know that nobody wants them. The other thing that's happened too is that we, with the addition of our new shed a year ago, we were able to move the other shed around, and we've created another area for plots for the food pantry. And then there was another strip of land right in the middle of our garden that was initially designated for orchard, but the trees all died. And so we finally decided to go ahead and till that up, and that got planted. So there was extra land that we, extra land, quote unquote, that we found to develop. So that's what we used. I think if you be creative, as the years go by, we might find some more spaces that we can use and utilize. So one of the things I wanted to mention is that if you don't realize it yet, that need for food is rising. I have the numbers from the Community Food Pantry of Spring Green. In May, they served 176 families. In June, it jumped to 209. And then in July, we served 212, which wasn't a big number. But the big jump was from May to June. And we don't know what the effect is going to be down the road. The Arena Food Pantry closed for a couple of months, but they're now open again. So it'll be interesting to see if that number drops for the Community Food Pantry of Spring Green. But the Community Food Pantry of Spring Green serves the whole River Valley School District. So even if those people in Arena have their food pantry open again, they can also come and get food from us. So it'll be interesting to see now what the numbers do in August. But having the weekly distribution takes the place of a distribution that usually happened on the fourth Wednesday for the food pantry. And we wanted to make sure that those clients that usually picked up veggies on the fourth Wednesday had the opportunity to get good produce when they normally wouldn't have gotten it. So we foresaw, like Marlon was saying, the need that was coming up this year for food. So what we average, maybe 5-6 families from the food pantry every time we have a distribution. We go through Heather Chastain, and she notifies the clients at the food pantry, and then they show up at a designated time. So I think we've been very fortunate in that. And our foresight of going ahead and adding extra plots with veggies in them has really paid off, I think, for the community.
Yeah, it's worked out well. Marlon?
Yeah, I'd like to mention that I don't think Doug sees an empty plot that he wants to plant everything. And that's a good thing. He never met a plot he didn't like or want to plant. And that's been a good thing for us this year as well, too. So
the plot thickens, then, in other words.
It does.
The plot
thickens. Very good, Phil. Very good.
The other question I have is, how do you deal with, like, the Wascally Wabbits that are around? Because they've been pretty thick here.
Boy, the rabbits have been terrible this year, actually.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, we need more raptors or, I don't know, foxes or something.
Right.
But actually, we've trapped a number. Well, Marlon actually has trapped a number of rabbits in the garden. And I would say there's probably been an increase in interest by gardeners in putting fences or borders around their plots to try to keep rabbits out as well. So they are a problem, without a doubt. Yeah, they've become quite an issue this summer in particular. And of course, for example, our brassica plot, again, we had a lot of cabbage in there. We also had broccoli and cauliflower. And, you know, the rabbits would ignore anything that managed to have survived a few weeks and was, you know, getting bigger and growing. But if you put a fresh transplant in, a little seedling, they just go down a row and just take those. So
it's like a salad bar.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. It was a bit of a problem there for a while. But you know, once the plants get big enough, typically the rabbits can't, you know, destroy them completely, at least.
Yes. So what are some special plans you have for the 10th anniversary, Rose Ellen?
Well, we have an all gardeners picnic scheduled, potluck picnic scheduled for Sunday, the 10th of August. And with that, at 4:30, we're going to recognize the Busy Bees completing their summer project. And then at 6 o'clock, we have an open house for the public. So we invite all the public to come and wander through the garden and ask questions and just see what, see our new building, and which they helped finance. We couldn't have done that new building without their help. So we'll have some suites and just time to visit and enjoy the gardens. See where our food pantry plots are, maybe interest more people in coming to garden, maybe interesting some people to volunteer, whether they're gardening out there or not. We can always use volunteers from the public, especially in the food pantry plots. Mm-hmm. That's basically where we're at. And just, I don't know how the other gardeners feel. They haven't been at it as long as Doug and I. I think we're the last two. We were the original... two of the originals, and we're still there yet. So I'm excited. I can't believe that it's been 10 years that garden has been growing, and to see how it has grown over those 10 years is amazing. So
has it gone past like what you originally envisioned, Doug? I mean, is it bigger than you thought?
I would say that 10 years ago, there was absolutely no possibility in our minds that it would grow to the extent that it has. It's grown in several leaps, to the point that we've even been concerned at times about whether we need to grow more somehow, because the plots are getting rented, and we're up to 45 families, and it's just it's very impressive. And the idea of a 20 by 40 shed, none of those things were even remotely imagined 10 years ago. In fact, 10 years ago, we had no watering system to speak of. We had a tank that was on a tower that we had to fill periodically from a hydrant. We'd fill it, and then it would, gardeners would go to that tank and get water, or in some cases they could run a hose from it. But it was very limited actually.
Very, very unreliable too.
And unreliable.
It didn't go very far.
Yeah, it didn't go very far. And so now, we've got water to all the plots. We have, I think, a very nice system for water. Again, we've got a very nice shed. And our garden, I think, is unique in the number of resources it provides, in that a person could come to our garden, never having gardened, and other than paying for the plot rental, they could get the tools from our shed that we provide. They could get seeds even from us, and in some cases, transplants in the spring. Rototilling could be done for them. We have fertilizer, we have mulch, we have compost, everything that they would need. I would encourage people who are not gardeners but have some interest in thinking about the community garden as a way to get into gardening, because we have all of the resources necessary, and we have a lot of expertise among our current gardeners. And I think we're a very friendly bunch.
Yeah.
And so you could be a complete stranger and come to the garden and see somebody and ask them about gardening. And I think without exception, you would get a very positive response.
You won't be a stranger long.
No, exactly.
No.
Exactly.
No. That's for sure.
That's what we're finding, too, as people come. It's kind of a community. Some of my best friends I've gotten through the garden, just because of our mutual interest, and then you find out you have other interests, then that grows. I think that's true with other people that have come too, that they've developed new friendships. It's kind of like a family. You check on each other. If you hear that somebody's sick or been in the hospital, then you kind of check on them and make sure they're okay. And of course, then you've got a plot to keep an eye on too. But it's a community. And that's what community gardening is all about, is that camaraderie. Recipes are shared.
Well, sure.
Plants are shared.
Yeah. Gardening expertise is shared.
Yeah.
It's fascinating how many different ways you can grow a cucumber, for example.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Techniques are shared.
Yeah. Yeah.
Different tools that other people use that you've never used. You know, advice. You know, it's just, it's a welcoming thing.
Perfect. Marlon, when do things kind of wrap up? I mean, because you can still put some things in the ground now that might grow before frost too, right?
Right. I mean, Doug's kind of leading that effort going into late summer and fall here about what we can utilize for fall harvesting as well as even over the winter as well too. So we're excited about doing that. That's something we really haven't done a lot of, but it's something we anticipate doing it later this summer, this fall, to do something different, to harvest more this fall and winter even.
Mm-hmm. You get a lot of support from the community businesses, I'm sure, around River Valley,
absolutely,
don't you?
Absolutely. They've been very forthcoming in utilizing machinery and tilling and things like that, where they've just donated their machinery or time to helping us out there, especially in the spring. When the ground needs to be worked up, and it's hard to do with a standard tiller sometimes. All that ground, it's been compacted over winter, so we're able to get local people and use their machinery to work up the ground and get us off to a good start for the spring growing season.
You'll be looking for the food pantry to continue and some of the entities in Spring Green to get some of those items here over the course of the next few weeks, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Way into the fall, too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good.
I'd like to give a shout-out to the village board.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, without them, we wouldn't be where we are, because back in 2016, when we were looking for a garden, all of a sudden we found this green space that they didn't realize they had. And they said, well, why don't you guys use that and we'll charge you $1 for that. And then they were so happy with what we did and how we progressed. And they've just been so very supportive of us. So thanks to the board of the Village of Spring Green for being there and supporting us, and I can't say enough about Robin Reed, the president, who every time I see her, she's just gushing about what we've done out there. And people on the street will stop me and say, you guys are an asset to our community. You don't realize that. And you know, we don't hear that, but people know we're there. And that makes a difference too, to have that support. And the financial support that the people have given us through our broad fries that we've had, the plant sales that we used to have, the caramel apple sale at the school fair. You know, kids come up and they say, oh, you're here this year, great, I come to the school fair just to get the caramel apples, you know. So the things that the community does for us has been amazing. We find stuff left at the garden that we don't know where it came from, that's tools and things. It just comes from someplace, you know, and that we thought you'd like to use this, or we thought you could use this. We don't need it anymore. So the community has just been wonderful over these last 10 years, and we just can't thank them enough. So hats off to Spring Green for all your support. Without our community, we wouldn't have our shed. It took 4 years to raise the money, but we have a really great equipment shed now. So I hope everybody stops out on Sunday evening from 6 to 7:30 and sees what their donation of their brats has helped us to do. That would be wonderful, just to have people come out and see.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
How do you see? What do you see? Goals for the next 10 years, Doug?
Whoa. Well, it'd be great to continue to expand. I wouldn't object to seeing the number of gardeners grow to 50, 60 gardeners, 70 gardeners. There's a lot of people live in the valley here that are near Spring Green. it would be, of course, very nice to keep up our food pantry efforts. We're up to probably close to 4/10 of an acre this year in food pantry plots. It would be really exciting to see that expand to, you know, 6 or 7 tenths of an acre, you know, and then you could go from there.
Even more, yeah.
That does require, you know, a lot of help from volunteers. You know, I'm constantly cautioned not to overexpand without knowing that we have the help online to make it work. You know, I think the future is bright, actually, for us. And again, the community is so positive. You know, I think we certainly can be nothing but hopeful for our future.
Perfect. Marlon, anything you want to add today?
Yeah, I think the fact that people, getting back to what Rose Ellen said, you can start out very small if you're a beginning gardener with a 10 by 10 plot. And sometimes people really get the fever of gardening and they've grown from a 10 by 10 plot, which I did about 6 years ago, to 2 10 by 20. So it's a fun thing to see how people develop. You know, some people starting out like that maybe think that it didn't turn out the way I wanted, so maybe this isn't for me. But in a lot of cases, it really gets people going about producing their own food for their own needs, organically, I might add, and then producing extra food for people that can use it as well, too. So there's a lot of giving to themselves and giving outside of their families and stuff like that. So that's one of the most rewarding things to see. We hope to gain more younger gardeners and families as this thing continues to evolve. Because as we see right now, a lot of the gardeners are senior members of the retirement thing, but we're getting more families involved. So we like to hope to see that continue.
No doubt about it. And I think a lot of it, you know, we talked this week, and we're right in the middle of our cancer walk here in Richland Center, but a lot of prevention goes with healthy eating, Rose Ellen, and this is a great way to start, isn't it?
Right. We are organic garden. We condone, is that the right word? We don't like people using the chemical fertilizers and all of that stuff, so that keeps that out of the foods. And the garden, that way, gardening that way is a lot healthier for the body. And boy, those foods that you grow in the garden that you can go out and pick yourself, they taste a lot better than what you buy in the grocery stores. So, and the grocery store stuff is usually, unless you're buying organic stuff in a grocery store, it's usually treated with something, if not grown, with a lot of fertilizers and chemicals that are bad for you. So this is a great way to try to get healthy by doing your own gardening. And whether it's with us or whether you're doing bucket gardening at home or you carve out a 5x5 plot in your own lawn, whatever, just to get out there and start even having a little bit of locally grown food that you know what went on it is a lot more healthier than going to the grocery store and buying something. So I'll put a plug in for farmers markets too. They are wonderful, and you know that all that stuff is healthy food for you too. So don't forget those farmers markets. They play a role in our eating habits too. So
most definitely. Yeah. Well, congratulations you guys on 10 years.
Yep.
Yeah,
and
thank
I want to again extend that invitation for everybody out there, no matter whether you live in Spring Green, Arena, Lone Rock, or Plain, Richland Center, Dodgeville, Reedsburg, wherever you're listening from, if you want to stop down and just wander through our community garden, and we'd love to have you on Sunday night, the 10th, from 6 to 7:30. And if anybody wants any help on developing a community garden, holler. We give you some advice.
Okay. Maybe we can have you back on and kind of assess the whole season, but if not, we'll see you next March then, right?
Sounds for like sure. A plan, Phil. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Always
good
to see you guys.
Yep. Thank you.
Rose Ellen Schneider, Doug Rouse, and Marlon Tafts from River Valley Area Community Gardens on this portion of the morning show.
If you're looking for a workplace that truly cares, at Rockwell Automation in Richland Center, it's more than just a job. It's a career with purpose. They put people first, offering great benefits, growth opportunities, and a positive, supportive environment. Rockwell is proud to stand behind its employees and support the Richland Center community every step of the way. Rockwell Automation, a great place to work, a great neighbor to have. Now hiring. Learn more today at rockwellautomation.com.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Sexsonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Are you looking for a meaningful way to give back to your community? Passages is looking for compassionate, motivated volunteers to join our team. We provide men, women, and children survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault with free, confidential services regardless of age, sex, or gender identity. We have a variety of volunteer opportunities available, from yard cleanup, donation sorting and organizing, and fundraising support, to shelter advocacy and survivor support. There are also a couple of larger outdoor projects that would be great for teams. Do you want to share a skill? We're also launching new life skills programming and are seeking volunteers to lead classes such as yoga, sewing, crocheting, cooking, meditation, grounding exercises, and more. Whether you're interested in direct client support or behind-the-scenes help, there's a place for you at Passages. Did you know that every hour you volunteer helps Passages meet its grant match? Learn more by visiting our website at passagesrc.com and click on the I Want to Help tab. There you will find a list of opportunities and a volunteer application. Join us in making a difference, one life, one step at a time.
Are you looking for a rewarding part-time job? Cobasin is currently hiring for part-time trip drivers for school sports and field trips, and to drive a shuttle to Spring Green 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. weeknights. Starting trip pay is $17. You get paid for the entire time you are gone, even the wait time. For questions, call Bev Lau at 647-4446 or stop by the Richland Center Cobasin Terminal off Highway 14 beside TC Auto Works.
Now is the time to make sure your vehicle is tuned up for summer. Hi, this is Sean from Sean's Auto Repair and Performance. We'll check your coolant, do a radiator flush, or give you that tune-up you need. Or maybe it's a new set of tires or an alignment. We can do that too. Whether it's cars, trucks, or SUVs, you'll get courteous, quality, professional service for imports and domestics. Call us now at 608-649-AUTO. That's 649-2886. Sean's Auto Repair and Performance, 184 East Mill Street, downtown Richland Center. People who care about your car.
On our morning show today from WRCO, Betsy Wiedenfeld joins us. She is one of the four GRACE ambassadors for this year's Greater Richland Area Cancer Elimination event, which happens on August 8th. It's coming up soon. And Betsy, thank you for stepping up and being an ambassador this year.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Great to have you in the radio studios here today to talk about it. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I am, I'm married, have been for 29 years, to Vince Wiedenfeld. We live in Ithaca, just outside of Ithaca, I guess, technically. And we have three children, four grandchildren. All grandchildren are busy in a million different things, so I stay busy that way over the summer when I'm not at school. So.
You were born in Richland Center, weren't you?
Yes, and I graduated from Richland Center, which is an oddity in my Wiedenfeld family. My mother-in-law, Virginia, is the only other one.
Well, that's all right. You're in good company then.
Yes.
So, wonderful. And you, of course, have been on the farm there for a number of years as well.
Yes. Yep. Right up to my cancer diagnosis, actually. Vince farmed with his brother, Mark, and it was Wiedenfeld Acres, too, and they had decided to get out of farming, had planned an auction at Stady there, the cattle center in Ithaca, and then, and that was planned for March, and then in January I got my cancer diagnosis, so it was moved up to February, which was perfect timing so that Vince had availability to go with me and be with me during the surgeries. And
life changed suddenly, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what type of cancer were you diagnosed with?
Colorectal.
Okay. And so is it one of those things where, you know, you kind of been putting it off, or is it something that you discovered, you know, right around the time you were diagnosed?
I had had, my main symptom was bleeding.
Okay.
And I had had some off and on for a while, nothing real serious. And then all at once, but I'd mention it to my doctor, and she had said, we'd talked about a colonoscopy, she suggested I do the at-home test. But then she said that I should make sure it's a day I'm not bleeding so that it didn't come back positive. And I said, well, doesn't that defeat the purpose? Maybe I should do it. But at the time I was doing daycare, I had several children that I was caring for, as you know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard for me to get away. And so I don't blame her, you know, the doctor, for saying, you know, let's try these other options first. But when things progressed and the bleeding became more, I got pretty weak. And in November, I'd have the daycare kids, and as soon as the last one was picked up, the parents had started asking me if I was feeling okay. And I said, well, no, a little more worn out than usual, but I'm sure it'll pass. And so I, as soon as they'd leave, though, I'd go crawl in bed and slept until morning. Well, then in December, it got worse. It wasn't just I could sit down, and I'd bleed whether I was going one way, you know, or the other. And so I had gone in before Christmas, and I had said, I had told her, I am really not feeling well. I had walked up the stairs to third floor. I don't know what I was thinking when I already felt so bad, but by the time I got up there, everything was spinning, and I had to stand and wait. She could visibly see I wasn't well, but sent me home and told me just to rest. And by the next day, I couldn't get out of bed. I was just too weak, and Vince had to help me stand up, and I walked around a little bit, and I said, I just can't. So he had me lay back down, finished his milking, and then we went to the doctor afterward. And he marched in and said, we are not leaving here until you figure out what's wrong with my wife. By the time we were done, it was going to be the Christmas holiday. They were going to be doing some remodeling or something in the surgical suites. One of the doctors then had agreed that he would just add me to his schedule before it closed. And because he knew me, he'd been at my house when I had an adult family home, and so he'd come for my adults. And so I got the colonoscopy scheduled at that point. They ran some blood work. I remember running into some of my church family, and I remember Paul Denman, and he said afterward, my God, Betsy, I thought you were dying that day. You look so awful. And I said, I knew, you know, something was wrong at that point. Well, then I had the colonoscopy, and it seemed really quick to me. And so the doctor had come out, and he said, I found your bleeder right away and removed it. And I've done hundreds of these, Betsy, and I know that you're ill, and I know that you should, you need to make sure that your doctor follows up, but I know what cancer looks like, and this isn't cancer. And so I thought, oh, thank God.
That was relief at that point.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. Yes. So we went home, and I did feel a little better because the bleeding had stopped. But they had told me to come back in a week, and they had discussed, you know, what they found. if anything, and what the next steps would be to figure out what was going on and what was making me so sick. So I went in without Vince. I remember him asking, do you want me to go with you? And I said, no, they told us it wasn't cancer, so I'll be fine. And then...
So they told you it was cancer when you went in.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I went in and it was... She asked me if I'd gotten a call at home from the doctor that had done the colonoscopy, and I said no. He happened to be leaving because he had had a family health issue that he had to go. And I said no. Why would he call me at home? And she just looked at me, and I said, I'm sick, aren't I? And she nodded, and that really, I think, was the only time she looked at me during that. It was really, that part was traumatic for me because she had said the polyp that they had removed was cancerous and that there was more around it. They weren't sure how much. And so she, you know, I guess I just sat there kind of frozen, like, whoa. What did she just say? And it didn't hit for a while.
Mm-hmm. Kind of numb to the situation.
Right, yeah. Yep. And then she had started listing the doctors I'd have to see. I'd need an oncologist, you know, a surgeon, everything. And said she would have her medical assistant schedule those, and she'll be in back in. And nobody came back in. She had actually gone, she thought the office had been seated again with a new patient, because when she came back in, she said, well, Betsy, what are you still doing here? And I said, well, you told me to wait, so I'm waiting, you know. And in the meantime, while I was waiting, I had called Vince, who was upset, obviously, and I told him I was fine, and I'd be able to get home. I had also called my son-in-law, which is probably strange, but we are very close, and I was asking him how I was going to tell Heather.
Oh, sure.
And he said, well, good Lord, don't do it now while she's at work. And she was working at the school at the time, and I said, no, I didn't intend to. Well, then Heather had messaged me at lunchtime asking what I found out, and I said, we can discuss it tonight when you get home. And she said, no, tell me. And I said, no, we'll discuss it when you get home. Well, she left school and came home because she knew something was wrong. So, you know, it seemed like it took forever to get the appointments. I ended up calling to Madison myself. I guess I thought, okay, so you tell me it's here. And then I wanted out.
Right.
Was the thing.
You wanted out immediately.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't want to sit and wait. And so I had called Madison myself. In the meantime, Dr. Alexander had contacted me and asked if there was asked if she could help. She knew a GI surgeon in Madison that did really well, and she would like to set that up for me. So I had already seen a surgeon in the same office, but then I switched. It was a female doctor, and she did an amazing job. I was diagnosed January 8th, and it was March 23rd, I believe, that I had. So it felt like forever, but it really wasn't forever.
Yeah, it was quite a quick turnaround, yeah. Actually. Yeah.
I think it helped to have Dr. Alexander get involved, and that she knew the surgeon. But we had gone March 23rd. Heather had come along, but she wasn't feeling well and really shouldn't have been there because it turned out she had influenza. And while they waited for me to come out, she had, her temp had gone up, and so they, Kyle came and got her and got her out of there. And then I was very, I am a religious woman, and at the time of the surgery, I was very calm. I had had a, well, I felt it was a visit from my mother, who had passed some years earlier. And it was, I, well, it was like a dream, and I was told it wouldn't be easy, but you are going to be fine. And right there, the calmness, and so I knew I was going to be fine.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it gives me goosebumps now. But so when they took me back, even, I was laughing and joking. So that was good. And then the good, the best news of it all was that it was removed with just the surgery. Oh, but prior to that, I'm sorry, I need to jump back. I had had, so when the polyp was removed, the doctor had not marked it where he had removed it. So then they don't know, the surgeon doesn't know where to go in and take out the excess. And so I had to have another colonoscopy. Those aren't pleasant.
No.
And he marked it. So the results had shown that it was a rather aggressive form and already had feelers out. And so I had made the decision that I wasn't going to just have it cut out a little. I went with the full resection and the ileostomy bag. I think I'm very happy that I made that decision because things could have changed, I'm sure, rather quickly. I had lymph nodes that came back right away, and so those were watched for quite a while, but they eventually disappeared, whether my body reabsorbed or, and so I just had a recent colonoscopy, and I was told I now get to go to every 5 years. Wow. Everything looked good.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes, it was, but gosh, getting there, it was.
And I can just imagine, a big mountain to climb. How far along was your cancer? What stage?
It was just a stage one.
Stage one, okay.
Yep. It,
so even though you'd had symptoms for a while, you did still catch it early, didn't
yep.
you?
Yep.
Okay, and that's so important.
Yes. What a blessing that was.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many years is cancer in your rearview mirror then?
We're at 6.5.
6.5?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yep.
And that's a positive too.
Yes, so very much so.
how did it change your life, you know, and when you know, especially on the road to recovery and where you are now?
Yep.
I mean, nobody wants it, but it makes you a different person, doesn't it?
It does. It very much does. And, well, I know that I helped additional people. Vince had a college buddy, and his wife was diagnosed shortly after. So I was able to talk her through things and let her know what to expect. She ended up having to have chemotherapy and everything, so I'm so grateful that I didn't have to do that. And then there was another young person here in the area that I helped through hers as well. I felt really good doing that. But it does make you, things are more important. We hadn't really traveled, and I've traveled since then, some with my sisters, and I do have a sister with cognitive impairment that lives with us. So she and I go regularly when Vince can't, but he and I have taken the first vacation since ever.
Mm-hmm. So you live life a little bit more?
Yes.
How many kids and grandkids?
Three children and four grandchildren.
Yeah.
And they're all at Ithaca.
What a blessing.
Yes.
Yeah. And you work at Ithaca
yes.
as well, right?
Yes. I've done a couple of different years. I've done different things when Kathleen would call and say they needed somebody for a few hours here and there because I have some lasting effects. When they did reattach, they had removed such a large portion. And so I have some lasting effects that make it difficult to work but we have found ways. So, and the school has been really good at working with me that way. And this, so I did a one-on-one 2 years ago. Last year I did a speech and language facilitator because our speech was online. And this year I am doing the wraparound daycare, the school-age daycare, in the morning. So looking forward to that. And it's nice. The kids just brighten my spirit so much. And they, I swear, they give me purpose.
Yes. And it's good that you have your energy back, though,
yes.
So you can keep
yes.
up with them, right?
Yep.
When the call came, you're notified that they were asking you to be an ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have maybe second thoughts or you're gung-ho right away?
I remember seeing June shortly after I had been diagnosed, and she said, you know, I hope when the time comes, you'll say yes when I call and ask you. And I had said, yeah, I think I could do that. Well, then a year ago, my friend Jenny Marroquin had called and asked if I would do it. And I said, oh, I don't know. Of course, I had had a lot of trouble. I had broken my femur, and I had ended up having four surgeries for that.
Unrelated to cancer.
Right. Yep. And so I wasn't getting around all that well. And I told her I would, but I said I'd also be okay if there are others, and there turned out to be more.